Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. This hour, what the dispute between the president and the people who have run our national intelligence means for American citizens. President Trump alternately demeans and praises America's intelligence agencies, but although most former directors have quietly rebuked Trump's often uninformed critiques, they've never taken the step that they took last week. 13 former U.S. intelligence chiefs signed a letter supporting former CIA Director John Brennan and rebuking the president after he revoked Brennan's security clearance. The LA Times wrote, "Signing the letter Thursday was a virtual who's who of American spy chiefs dating back to the late 1980s, a striking show of solidarity from the top ranks of the national security establishment. Our discussion today is the president chipping away at the trust Americans have in the work of our national intelligence agencies, or was that trust already diminished after the run-up to the Iraq War and other misadventures? What are the implications of an intelligence establishment that isn't trusted? As our guests join us, I'd like to hear from you. Do you think many of the intelligence agencies deserve the scorn and the skepticism that the president heaps on them and their former chiefs? Is it appropriate for former intelligence heads to speak up and speak out? So I'd like to hear your view of the implications of this battle that's been going back and forth between President Trump, the national intelligence agencies, and some of the people who have run them and been involved with them, and then whether you think it's appropriate for former intelligence chiefs like John Brennan is doing to speak out. Here's the number, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter, at Carrie NPR. John Radson is with us. He's a professor of law at Mitchell Hamlin University, former CIA assistant general counsel, and with us from St. Paul. And John, welcome back to the show. Good to talk to you again.
Thank you, Carrie. Good morning.
David Jackson is with us. He's White House correspondent for USA Today, and he's covered the relationship between the president and the intelligence community over several administrations. And David, welcome. Good to have you on the show.
Right. Thanks for having me.
David, there's some developments this morning because the president has been tweeting about this, particularly about James Clapper. And the president tweeted today, even James Clapper has admonished John Brennan for having gone totally off the rails. Maybe Clapper is being nice to me so he doesn't lose his security clearance for lying to Congress. Will you tell me where the status is of some of these other former directors and heads for their security clearance with the president? Where do we stand today?
Well, first of all, as with so many Trump tweets, you have to disentangle them. I think what Clapper has said is that he thinks Brennan's been a little more outspoken than maybe he should have been, and he's been particularly harsh in his criticism, but he hasn't criticized Brennan to the degree that Mr. Trump says. So that's one thing. But in terms of where we stand is that we've got a whole bunch of former intelligence officials from both parties who are very angry with the president for the way he's dealt with not only with John Brennan, but with intelligence issues in general, especially with respect to Russia. And it's quite something. He's not the first president to get crosswise with the intelligence community, but there's never been anything that's been public to this degree.
I'm going to come back to what you just said about president not being the first president to do this. May I ask you, David, whether you think this letter that was signed by these former intel heads is in itself unprecedented or not? I mean, have we seen demonstrations of opposition like this before?
We've seen demonstrations of opposition, but not publicly, not in a public letter as one that you've described. So that's pretty unprecedented. I mean, we've had plenty of pushback from the intelligence community against previous presidents, but it's never been played out in public like this.
John, what do you think the implications of just specifically this back and forth between the president and Brennan and what some of these other chiefs are saying? We'll get to some of the larger questions in a minute.
I think it's of concern for all American citizens. We don't want people to lose confidence in the agencies that protect us within the country, that protect us outside the country. this is not new. Trump has been going after many of the establishment agencies. He's criticized the Department of Justice, the FBI. He's criticized people in the intelligence community. What I've noticed, though, is he's restrained himself. To my recollection, he has not gone after senior members of the Department of Defense. And even when he's attacking the other agencies, he tries to draw this distinction that he's talking about the political appointees. He's not talking about the day-to-day men and women that do the job at the FBI, the Department of Justice, the CIA. One other point, this is common to the Trump candidacy and his presidency. I can't think of other presidential candidates where people from the candidate's party, establishment national security officials, said that Trump was not qualified to be president. They said that they would not serve in a Trump administration. This back and forth that today is accentuated by Brennan and Trump, this has been going on. Trump has been going after the establishment for a long time. They have reciprocated. Some of Trump's supporters talk about a deep state. This kind of attack on Brennan and others may serve Trump politically. Anytime somebody then responds or criticizes Trump, the hardcore supporters will say this is proof of the deep state. They may even say that I as a former official is a spokesperson for that deep state. I can tell them I'm not, but it makes it difficult for anyone to comment somewhere between these extremes, between Trump and between Brennan.
Let me go to some callers here to Rob listening in Chicago. Hi, Rob. What do you think of this back and forth and what it means for American citizens?
I mean, real quick, I mean, the CIA brought to you by weapons of mass destruction. We're in war for 17 years and 15 in Iraq. I mean, these guys are the Enron of government agencies. If they had accountability, they'd be out of business. And this and these letters, it's like Ken Lay, Skilling, and Kozlowski writing to somebody saying, hey, leave us alone. I mean, these guys brought us down a rabbit hole, and they're circling the wagons. I look at it that way.
So, Rob, you think that President Trump is reflecting the skepticism that you and other average Americans have about the veracity of the information that the intelligence agencies work on, produce?
Oh, absolutely. Trump is doing everything. I mean, and I'm not a Trump supporter either, but I will say this, is that the direction this country's going in, I mean, he's just winging it and doing, he's just shaking things up. And I think that was part of the reason that he got elected. People wanted to see that. So, but as far as the CIA goes,
yeah.
I mean, they're bunglers.
David, what do you think of this idea that the president's only articulating what a lot of Americans believe about our intelligence agencies?
Oh, for sure. There's no doubt. There's also a large number of Americans who distrust the CIA and have. I mean, heck, there are people who think that the CIA killed President John F. Kennedy. So this goes a long way back. Suspicion of the CIA has been there for decades. And I think to a degree, Trump shares it. By the way, in terms of weapons of mass destruction, that's one of the big dust-ups we've had. President Bush and the CIA kind of faced off against each other in Iraq. Now, not everyone in the CIA believed that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. And in fact, if you recall, Vice President Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld and some other people in the Defense Department created their own intelligence unit within the Defense Department to explore the idea of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And one of the reasons for that was because they were getting pushback from some people in the CIA. And while many people in the CIA did endorse the idea there was WMD in Iraq, there was another group that didn't believe that, and they leaked a lot of stuff to the media questioning the Bush administration's proposals. So that's one of that aspect of the story didn't get a lot of play at the time, but it was definitely there in terms of the CIA and the president's having a big dust-up.
This is a really good point. John, I also hear in what David said and what our caller Rob said from Chicago that, you know, the CIA and some of these other intelligence agencies have to be accountable for some of the damage they've done to their reputations themselves.
For sure. They need to be accountable. They operate within a democracy. They are not subject to the same checks that apply to the Department of Agriculture. That all makes sense. And I think in any democracy, we're going to be especially troubled by secret agencies or agencies that operate under the top secret classification, whether it's the CIA or others. I have been on your program many times. I understand the mistakes, the abuses that occurred there. The miscalculation about Iraqi weapons of mass destruction would be one. The operation of black sites and the enhanced interrogation techniques would be another. But if we look at that, those are very tough questions that the president is asking. Tell me about the existence of weapons and mass destruction in a country that's secretive. Do the kind of operations that the other agencies are unwilling or unable to do. We can think about the possibility of drone strikes, extraordinary rendition. The CIA, by its charter, by its place in American democracy, is the only agency that could do that. With all the questions about the CIA, with all the legitimate doubts, I ask your caller, Rob, and my colleagues, do we think that we would be better off without an intelligence agency? We tried that after World War II. It was naive for President Truman to think in the Cold War that we could operate without an intelligence agency. One other question is, do these critics credit the CIA in reducing the impact of al-Qaeda? Do they credit the CIA in killing bin Laden? If we're going to do an assessment, I think we have to be fair in giving them credit when they've done something well. And you're right, Kerry, when they don't do something as well, we have to figure out how we make the agency better. But to call them names, to talk about shutting it down, to me, seems irresponsible.
David, are there examples of other presidents who have acknowledged the work of the CIA in, you know, in the kind of positive outcomes that John just suggested? I guess I wonder, I don't think we hear about the wins very often. We hear a lot about the mistakes. Are there other presidents who have tried to point that out?
I think so. I think presidents traditionally make the pilgrimages out to Langley to give a speech to the troops, if you will, and often praise the CIA's successes, of which there have been many. We had President Ronald Reagan was made extensive use of the CIA during the Cold War and praised their work. And George H.W. Bush, I believe, said the CIA deserves a lot of credit for winning the Cold War. So there has been that. It's been a lot more. It's just like anything else. And when things go well, you don't hear about it as much as when things go badly.
Yeah, that's true. To the phones to Mary, listening in Golden Valley. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
What did you want to say about this?
Well, I think this version of history where the CIA told us there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq is a distortion from what I remember, which is that this John Bolton was in a position within the Bush administration to ask that raw intelligence go directly to him without CIA analysis, and he cherry-picked information that made it look like there was weapons of mass destruction, and with overriding the conclusions that the intelligence agencies actually would have had. So I think it was the Bush administration, not the CIA, and especially John Bolton, who is now in a position in the Trump administration to do it again, who distorted the intelligence.
Good point. David, you spoke to this. Maybe we need a little more context on this. You spoke to the political pressure that some of the intelligence agencies felt about this. Does Mary have her history right on that?
Yes, to a degree, for sure. There was no, and that's a debate I think will go on for the rest of our lives. Is what did the Bush administration really push the WMD theory, or did the CIA agree with it? John Bolton was in the Bush administration. I don't think he wielded as big a stick as some of the others, particularly Vice President Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, and his deputy defense secretary Paul Wolfowitz were very involved in the WMD issue, and they did. I mean, some people said they cherry-picked. I mean, you know, I guess that's always subject to debate. They felt like the evidence was there to show that Iraq did have WMD, even though they didn't. And as for the CIA, there were officials in the CIA who did not believe that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction and did not believe that an invasion was a good idea. But you also had George Tenet with his famous comment, it's a slam dunk.
Right.
So, there was division within the CIA over this question, just as there remains.
John, so, Gary, if I could add
John,
to that.
Yeah, John, please. Go ahead.
When we talk about the CIA, we have to be clear what part of the CIA do we mean. And I agree with David. I think that George Tenet was more of an advocate. The famous slam dunk line, when he saw the doubts that President Bush had, asking, is this the best case that's there? There were senior people within the CIA that were not as certain about the analysis. If you recall, before Colin Powell, as Secretary of State, made his speech to the United Nations, he spent time with his chief of staff, Wilkerson, at CIA headquarters. He was worried that maybe this information was exaggerated, cherry-picked. He put his reputation on the line. He's lost some of that credibility, because as it turned out, the case was not good. What people have to understand, these are extremely difficult questions. In the first Gulf War, the intelligence community came to the conclusion that Saddam Hussein did not have weapons of mass destruction. In our assessment afterward, we realized, and this is the conclusion of many analysts, that Saddam Hussein was several months away from the possibility. And I think that Cheney legitimately said, I'm not always confident about the CIA. He was going to err on the side of assuming that Saddam had had nuclear weapons at that point. And this is after 9/11, and I think we were much more risk averse. There, it's easy afterward to say that they got it wrong. The question is, in real time, the president is asking, what is your assessment? The same thing with the bin Laden raid. The president, Obama, wanted to know, what is the likelihood that bin Laden is there? Nobody can answer those questions to a 100% certainty. Right now, we'd like to know about North Korea's designs. We don't have 100% certainty. We want to know about Iran's nuclear ambitions. We don't have 100% certainty. We have to try the best we can, but if they get it wrong, we can't then say we're going to fire everybody in the intelligence community. Yeah. That, to repeat my word, would be irresponsible.
Yeah, John, this is a good point, that when you're looking in hindsight, it seems like a very obvious decision and a very obvious mistake, but I appreciate the nuance in the real time of trying to figure what we knew and what we didn't know. David, would you want to add something to that?
No, I think that's right. There's an under, and one other thing to think about is when Trump complains about the CIA and the intelligence community today, he's really not talking about Iraq. He's only talking about their involvement in the Russian investigation. He cites Iraq and some of the other mistakes of the past to try to bolster that conclusion. But this is all about Russia, in terms of his attitude towards the intelligence community.
And when you say that, you're pointing specifically to what?
Just the Clapper. Brennan's entire criticism has been that Trump colluded somehow with the Russians during the 2016 election.
Right.
That's what Trump's mad about, and that's why Trump yanked his security clearance. Same with Clapper. Trump's targets and the jihad on the intelligence community have all been involved in one form or another with the investigation of Russian election activity in 2016. Now, there are two ways to look at this. Trump supporters say that he feels like he's being set up by these folks and they're trying to link him to Russians, even though he didn't have any involvement. Others will tell you that Trump is very fearful about what the special counsel is going to determine about Russia, and that he's trying to undermine the case before it becomes public.
Although I will say this, David, and maybe this is not right. I thought I remembered the president being critical of intelligence agencies during the campaign, and that is the time when he would talk about Iraq.
Right. In one case during a debate in South Carolina, he was criticizing his predecessors, including George W. Bush, over the Iraq war, and he cited the intelligence. He threw in the intelligence community as well in complaining about Iraq. But my interpretation of that, and I could be wrong, was that he was going after President George W. Bush in an effort to get at Jeb Bush, his brother, who was competing against him in the Republican primaries.
More nuance, very necessary in this conversation. If you've just tuned in, our guests are talking with us this morning about President Trump's deep criticisms. And I will say sometimes he praises the American intelligence agencies, but he is often highly critical about American intelligence. And as you hear David Jackson saying, some of this stems from his concerns about the role, the development of intelligence about Russia and maybe his potential involvement in that. But he talks often and tweets often about intelligence agencies and specifically about some of the people who have run those intelligence agencies. For the purposes of our conversation today, I'm asking whether you think the president is chipping away at the trust that Americans have in the work of our national intelligence agencies. And then what's the larger implication of that? So do you think that these intelligence agencies deserve this skepticism and scorn? What do you think is the larger meaning of having a president undermine the trust that Americans have in national intelligence, not just the CIA, but some of the other agencies that are doing intelligence work? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. You can talk to me about it on Twitter at @CarrieMPR, where a listener says, ignoring Trump diatribe and his attempt at self-preservation, The objective evidence suggests that U.S. intelligence agencies deserve a lot of skepticism. Failures in Iraq, Libya, Russia, Ukraine are a few of many examples. But again, we may never know fully about successes, too. John, what do you think of that?
I think it's repeating the point. People need to then distinguish that the CIA does analysis. It tries to figure out issues about Putin's intentions, about Merkel's intentions. Those are questions that are answered after we gather up information from human sources, and they're going to get some things right and wrong. During the Cold War, we were trying to figure out what the Soviets were doing with their military installations. During the Vietnam War, we wanted to figure out how effective the bombing campaign was there. And there were debates between the CIA, the Department of Defense, on that intelligence side. Then there's another side which is getting conflated. That's the covert action when we're trying to fix an election, when we're helping paramilitary groups. That is only done at the president's direction, and it's because the president cannot find another agency that will do it. And it's when we want some secrecy. Many of the programs after 9/11 fit into that covert action category. John Brennan, while he was running the CIA, and when he was Obama's counterterrorism advisor, made some statements that he thought the CIA should go back to that traditional role, the analysis role. And what I wonder in this, and I think Brennan and Trump know much more than anyone else, is there a possibility that the CIA, through its human sources, has developed more information than is in that famous Steele dossier about Russian interference in the election or Russian connections to the Trump campaign? I think that that is the backdrop of what's going on. We know about the wiretapping that was done by the National Security Agency. Those transcripts are out there. They were available to Brennan. What I feel, I don't have any classified information, what I feel is some concern that the CIA, through human sources, because they would be tasked by Obama or others to figure out to what extent are the Russians meddling. We can rely on the technical means. We've heard a lot about that, the National Security Agency. But I think to supplement it, we would want human sources. Is there somebody in the successor of the KGB, the FSB, that can give us information? Can we run a source there? Is there somebody that's traveled and has met with Putin? That's the kind of information that the CIA excels in gathering. There's only one other agency, maybe the FBI, they work on sources here, but working foreign sources, that is the core of the CIA's mission.
Have you had some questions about that as well, David?
I think John's hit it right on the head. It's all one of the interesting things about Brennan's criticism is he was CIA director during this when the Russia investigation began, so he undoubtedly knows things that we don't know.
Uh-huh.
Now, Brennan says he's been careful only to comment on evidence that's in the public domain, that he's not using any inside information to make his criticisms. But you can't help but think that he knows some things. And I think Trump feels like Brennan also knows some things. And that's really the root of this dispute, is what is just basically what the CIA knows, the evidence that the CIA and other intelligence agencies have dug up about what relationship, if any, did the Trump campaign have to Russia.
David Jackson with us from USA Today and John Radson with us from Mitchell Hamlin University Law School. To the phones to Jeff in Minneapolis. Jeff, it sounds like you have some experience with the CIA.
Yes, about 16 years worth, actually. And I'd like to add in saying that obviously I didn't work at the levels of director, but I know that any discussion that says we shouldn't allow the directors to have a comment is very partisan, very political, and is really going to damage the credibility of our intelligence agency and the FBI going forward. If anybody can just routinely dismiss the evidence that the CIA presents, like the CIA did of terrorist plots against America before 9/11, then we're going to be in a lot more We're going to have a lot more problems than what we do now.
So, Jeff, I'm curious about how you see the way that John Brennan has, you know, utilized his pulpit. I mean, he's been using the vehicle that the president uses, Twitter, but he's also been on a lot of the talk shows with some very harsh criticism. Is he also contributing, do you think, to some of the skepticism? Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. That's a valid question. But I also see that you have to fight fire with fire, and he who lives by the sword dies by the sword. if a president wants to run the country by Twitter and convince half the country that, you know, his way is the way to go, then you know what? You have to meet the enemy on his – I'm sorry to talk about my current president as the enemy, but you have to meet the enemy on his battlefield. I'd like to point out that all the problems of the CIA, all the this you guys got kind of sidetracked by talking about all the mistakes that the CIA has made, the errors and the moral problems that they've had. Most of those were actually done during Republican administrations when the CIA was trying to follow what the executive was trying to tell it to do.
Okay.
Now we have a situation of where the CIA is trying to provide information about a crisis in the country. Can you imagine a bigger crisis than have people not be confident in our electoral
system?
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. John, a couple things there from what Jeff had to say. Is he right about the political history of this, that when the CIA has erred, it is often because they're trying to satisfy some agenda from the White House, and those are often Republican presidents?
I agree. I wouldn't make it as partisan. There are two eras for the CIA. There is the pre-Church Committee hearings era, and at times it seemed that the CIA was operating on its own initiative, that it didn't have formal approval from the president, whether that president was a Democrat or a Republican. We had many reforms after that period in the 70s. It is not possible under the law for the CIA to do something on its own. It has to have a specific order from the president, whether we're talking about the aggressive policies after 9/11 or we're talking about Obama. Remember, Obama was an aggressive critic of the CIA. Once he became the president, he realized it was his CIA.
That's right.
And it could solve many problems. To answer the question that you posed at the very beginning of this segment, should the former officials comment on issues of national security? Somebody like Brennan Hayden? I think the answer is yes. We need to educate the American public. It's difficult to navigate when you're not allowed to talk about classified information. They have experience in explaining what the agencies do, what their weaknesses are, what their strengths are. And I think the question that you're asking is Brennan speaking in appropriate terms. Is this the right kind of language?
Yeah.
I've been criticized for being too sharp in my rhetoric. I'm a bit of a street fighter, so I sympathize with Brennan. But if I were giving him advice, I would tell him don't stoop to the same level as Trump. Don't be trading tweets. You diminish the two of you. Brennan, I don't know him personally, from people that have talked to me about him, he's a tough guy. He's from New Jersey. He has some of those values that come from the East Coast. Fordham educated, Jesuit trained. He's used to arguing. He states his views very forcefully. That probably facilitated his rise. And he doesn't back down from Trump. And I think much of the reaction depends on what you think about Trump. I'm trying to stand outside of the politics and say, is this a dignified way for our former CIA director to be behaving? And if the answer is no, I'm going to stick to it, and I'm not going to say, well, just because the president is behaving in an undignified way, we need someone to match him tit for tat. I don't believe in that.
David, I've wondered this, what John just said, what the intelligence community and Washington thinks of the way Brennan is handling this.
A lot of divisions. If you'll note, the petitions that you referred to earlier, if you'll read the top of them, they're very carefully worded. And the reason for that is that some of the signers don't think that Brennan is helping their cause, that they feel like he's been too aggressive. They don't like the Twitter thing, that he's been just too much of a street fighter, if you will. So there's division about Brennan's tone and approach, but there's almost unanimous support for the idea that he should be allowed to speak out, and yanking his security clearance, Trump is just punishing a critic.
David Jackson with us from the USA Today, where he's the White House correspondent, and John Radson with us, former assistant general counsel for the CIA. We're going to get a look at the latest news when we come back. I want to talk about some of the rhetoric that the president used during the campaign, including when he invited Russia into get into Hillary Clinton's and the DNC's emails, what the implications of that are, and again, this larger question about what it means that Americans' trust, the trust in government has been diminishing for years, what it means that trust in the intelligence agencies is diminished and undermined by President Trump himself. 651 227-6000 to join us to talk about it, 800-242-2828, wherever you are in the region, and on Twitter at Carrie NPR. And we'll get to Stephen John now with the latest. Hi, Stephen. What are you leading with?
Carrie, the Trump administration has proposed a major rollback in Obama-era restrictions on climate-changing emissions from coal-fired power plants. The plan announced today gives the states more discretion in choosing how to regulate pollution from the plants. The Environmental Protection Agency called the current regulations overly prescriptive and burdensome. The federal judge in the bank and tax fraud trial of Paul Manafort instructed the jury today to continue deliberations and try to reach consensus on all 18 counts against the political consultant and former Trump campaign chairman. U.S. District Judge T.S. Ellis said if jurors cannot reach consensus on all counts, he may consider accepting what they have reached consensus on. The jury is in its fourth day of deliberations. The Kremlin is dismissing new reports that Russia is targeting U.S. political groups through cyber attacks ahead of midterm elections. Microsoft says it's uncovered new intrusions by Russian government-linked hackers on U.S. political groups. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov today denied the allegations and said Microsoft's statement lacks detail and that it wasn't clear who the hackers in question are and how they could distort the U.S. electoral system. Investigators in Iowa have recovered a body believed to be that of a 20-year-old college student who disappeared from her small hometown in the central part of the state a month ago. The Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation said it plans a late-afternoon news conference to provide an update on the search for Molly Tibbetts, saying investigators were working to confirm the identity of the body. The forecast includes some patchy smoke across the region again today, scattered sprinkles in the central and south this afternoon, otherwise decreasing clouds. This is NPR News. It's 11:38.
On the next NPR News Presents, from the America Abroad series, a look at the backlash against the millions of Muslims that have moved to Europe in recent years. Xenophobic and violent populist movements have been gaining steam. That's today at noon and 9 p.m.
What are a lot of you listening to on the podcast right now? Pay for Women in Sports and our cult movie show from last week. If you miss a show, can't be here at 9 or 11, you can always find us on the podcast when it's convenient for you. Search NPR News with Carrie Miller wherever you listen.
Support comes from Half Price Books, honoring teachers and librarians year-round. Information on the HPB Educator Discount Program at neighborhood stores and at hpb.com/edu.
Back to the discussion now about national intelligence and President Trump's criticism of it and this feud that's going on between former CIA Director John Brennan and the president. To a caller here, to David in Excelsior. And David, thanks so much for waiting. I know it's been a while.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me on.
Sure.
And I can be an extremely harsh critic of the CIA. I'm a former Vietnam veteran, and I'm a Vietnam veteran, I should say. And I know that something that is not said in this conversation, that the CIA is actually the president's private army, seen time and again in various conflicts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
However, there is another side to this, and something that the general population should be concerned about and criticized in criticism of the VA as voiced by the president. And that is the tie that is related to a program earlier in the day that I did not hear, related to by my wife, on the
McCarthy
of Trump's criticisms of the intelligence agencies. And that is putting fear out there, not just in speaking up and speaking out, not just among intelligence agencies, but amongst all government employees and also of the public in general. And that was the fear that was engendered during the McCarthy era, of which there are links to the Trump family through Roy Cohen as the attorney of McCarthy. And with that said, I will hang up and let you discuss what
okay.
I brought up.
John, you might have missed the segment that we did at 9 o'clock where we talked about President Trump's use of Joseph McCarthy in a tweet about what's happening with the Mueller investigation. Do you see the tie that David is making between this?
I do. Maybe that's a way to bring together some of the threads of the conversation. We might be too intellectual about this. Maybe the Trump goal is to do everything that he can to undermine the Mueller investigation. Maybe mm-hmm. he's worried about the charges that are going to be brought, how these cases are going to go forward. Mueller is part of the establishment. He worked in the law enforcement side for the FBI, for the Department of Justice. Some of Mueller's sources come from the intelligence side, whether it's the National Security Agency or the CIA. Maybe this battle with Brennan is not so much about Brennan and about our intelligence agencies, but it's about doing whatever he can to undermine the establishment people that support Mueller, that have similar careers to Mueller. Maybe he's worried about what Mueller will do, and he's going to go after anybody that is like Mueller. Mueller was one of those establishment people that was uncomfortable with the Trump candidacy. He's going to lump Brennan and Mueller in the same category as somebody that's not part of his program, part of his political project.
David, you have suggested that much of this is about the Mueller probe. Would you go that far?
I don't know if I'd go that far. I don't think it's Mueller specific so much as the investigation as a whole. I think there's plenty of evidence to suggest that the president is doing whatever he can to say that an investigation of him is unfair. They're trying to set me up. And basically, he's already laying the groundwork for arguing that that the charges are false and it's the product of some kind of government conspiracy. Mueller's obviously plays a big role in this, but I think it's just the investigation as a whole. And his targets could just as easily be a guy like James Comey or Clapper or even his own CIA, even his own national intelligence director right now, Dan Coats.
That's so right.
Whatever target's in front of him is the one he's going to shoot at, and then it all relates to the investigation of Russia.
I want to play a bit of sound from the president during the campaign, where, as noted here, he's inviting Russia in to hack into emails. Let's listen.
Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing. I think you will probably be rewarded mightily by our press.
Here's what John Brennan wrote about that. The already challenging work of the American intelligence and law enforcement communities was made more difficult in late July 2016 when Mr. Trump publicly called upon Russia to find the missing emails of Mrs. Clinton. David, is that believable that the work was indeed made more difficult by Trump saying that?
I'm not sure it was made more difficult, but that is one of the most fascinating chapters in this whole saga, because in one of Mueller's indictments of Russians who are alleged to be involved in the hacking, it says that there was a hacking attempt that very same day that Trump made those comments. Mueller didn't
wow.
elucidate on this view, but it's clear as a bell in there that he thinks there might be some kind of relation because something happened the very same day that Trump made that call. I guess I should add that Trump said he was joking when he said that, and it was said at a time when we all knew that the Russians were trying to infiltrate our elections. But that's an episode that I think is going to come back up.
I don't know that he was joking, and this is something
I know.
That
this
Trump,
is so confusing.
He said he was joking. I'm not sure he was, but
he can retract anything, as he retracted his comments after the summit with Putin. He said, I meant the exact opposite. I remember hearing that live. I thought at the time that it was bizarre. When you've played it again, Kerry, for us, it seems bizarre to have a president reaching out to foreign governments, foreign leaders, in a way that he's not willing to reach out to his experienced professionals, whether they're in the military,
exactly.
the intelligence community, the law enforcement agencies. I also noticed something earlier when David was talking about Trump's view of the investigation. I think he resisted using the word witch hunt. I commend him. It takes discipline. It shows you the power of repetition by Trump and Giuliani and his other spokespeople. Is they keep saying it, and it's very difficult to think about Mueller, the investigation, without associating it with that term witch hunt. And I think they have accomplished their purpose. They've diminished the credibility, and I believe that they continue to try to undercut the credibility of what Mueller is doing. This is their main political obstacle. They'll do everything they can to get it out of the way.
I mean, David, is that just the reality that if President Trump holds a hardcore base of somewhere, what, between 32 and 36%, that those people probably will not be convinced of the veracity of whatever Mueller finds? And that's just how it's going to be.
I think that's right. I mean, I'm not sure how high the number is. Of course, a lot of it depends on what Mueller actually produces. We're expecting some kind of report to be submitted to the Justice Department, and presumably he'll lay out his findings regarding Trump and Russia. And a lot of the view of Mueller's work will be determined by what kind of facts he produces. But there'll always be some people who will take Trump's side, regardless of what it is. You know, his famous comment: "You could shoot someone in the middle of Fifth Avenue and not be convicted of it." He's probably right about that. I'm not sure if the number's as high as 30%, but it's definitely a big number.
Ed in Burnsville called to say, what's different about questioning the integrity of intelligence agencies is that a president as a critic is very different than citizens wondering. The language he uses is important, which speaks, John, to what you were just saying about this repetition of words like witch hunt and how that just becomes part of our language to talk, you know, in a political arena, in a way that I think, you know, really diminishes our understanding of just what it is Mueller's doing.
It does affect the discourse. I know Ed from Burnsville. He's somebody that has worked with various American agencies, and I think his belief in the value of these agencies transcends politics. And I think for many of the career professionals, whether it's in the intelligence community or in law enforcement, they believe they're doing something that is necessary for the country. They're doing their best. And I go back to your question. It should be troubling to all of us that the integrity, the reputations of these agencies, they were diminished before Trump came into office. And I think that what's going on, to use the term that you selected, it's being chipped away. And this is something that should concern Democrats, Republicans, independents. We need these agencies for our national security, for our well-being. They need to do a better job. There's no doubt about that. The question, the more difficult one, is how do we improve them in this environment?
Well, David, how would you answer that? That's a good question. It's probably worth another hour on the show, but here we are.
I think it is concerning, and I think that the intelligence agencies have lost some ground in all this, because many of Trump's supporters are very conservative, and normally conservatives would be very supportive of law enforcement and intelligence.
That's the weird thing here. Yeah.
Right. But I think Trump's persuaded a lot of these people that the intelligence community is out to get me. So I think that credibility has been damaged. But I still think the jury's out on how much damage, because we don't yet know what Mueller's going to come up with.
Kerry, could I go back to an earlier point that I'd like to highlight?
Yep.
Where I am hopeful is I don't think Trump has dared take on the Department of Defense. He will quibble with former military people, whether it's McMaster, now Kelly. He does not, to my knowledge, mess with Mattis. He doesn't mess with the generals. He doesn't want to pick a fight with the United States military. That is reassuring to me. I would not like him to be picking the fight with the intelligence community, Department of Justice. He has done that. He's criticized Sessions over at DOJ. He's criticized Chris Wray at the FBI. Unless David corrects me, I don't see that he's doing the same thing to Mad Dog Mattis and the other people at the Department of Defense.
David, you know
no,
what's
you're absolutely right. I think Jim Mattis may be the most powerful defense secretary we've ever had. Trump has very little to do with what Mattis does.
Well, that is interesting. And if you think about McRaven, what he has said and what he's written about the president, there's an opening that if the president was going to take on the military, you'd think he would have responded, but he didn't.
Wisely, he doesn't want to be.
In some interview, he said he didn't know who McRaven was, which is quite startling, but he didn't like him anyway. But you're right, that's been it. I mean, I think the McRaven op-ed in the Washington Post asking Trump to withdraw his security clearance as well, I think that might be a pivotal event, because that guy is revered by there's a lot of divisions within the intelligence community, just like every other department. But William McRaven is about as revered a figure in Washington as you can imagine. And when he came out the way he did, that opened up a lot of eyebrows.
John, you were going to add?
No, that was my – it's the last person that Trump wants to pick a fight with. And I'm troubled if Trump doesn't know who that was. And people should read – it's a guest of yours. In late in my queue, Mark Bowden has written a great book about the killing of bin Laden and talks about McRaven's career He was the operational commander of that. The respect, this is what David is saying, that he had from all the people in that operation, and the great respect that the president, the commander in chief, had, and the other senior people to let him run that operation. And it is an answer to people that the CIA or the military can't do anything right. I think that we should all commend the bin Laden raid. It was done in a way that did not take many innocent lives. We accomplished the mission, and it shows you that at that time, the president and his intelligence community, they had credibility, because when President Obama announced that bin Laden had been killed, mm-hmm. he didn't present photos.
That's right.
He didn't give us evidence, and we believed him because we felt that there was credibility in the White House and the agencies that were serving him. We considered it a mission done and accomplished.
Boy, this is such a good point, David, because one of the things I wanted to bring up was, what happens if the U.S. faces something catastrophic or just some other huge challenge to us from outside the United States, and we're relying on our intelligence agencies for guidance, and the president has spent all this time undermining their credibility? What happens then?
Well, presumably he still has faith in the people he installed in the intelligence community. Remember that a lot of his criticisms are with people from the Obama era. So presumably he likes guys like Dan Coats and new CIA director, and he would proceed accordingly. But you've asked a question that everybody in Washington, I think, has asked at one time or another in the last 2 years. If we had some major catastrophe, what would be the reaction? And frankly, nobody knows.
David, I really appreciate the time this morning. Thanks so much for making it. I know when you're covering the White House, it's busy days, busy and long days. So thank you.
Right. Thank you.
John, what would you say to that? That question about what happens when their credibility is at stake in a you know, existential kind of crisis?
That's scary. Think of the days after 9/11.
Right.
We wanted to believe what the president was
right.
telling us. Think about scenarios going forward. Let's say there's something that explodes in California. The president tells us that this came from North Korea. If nobody believes it, it will limit the president's ability to act. Then another scenario that I consider is, if Trump doesn't have the confidence of the military, could you have insubordination at the top levels? Let's say Trump, in a tempestuous way, says he's going to launch a preemptive attack on North Korea. Is it possible that Mattis, without even resigning, would say, no, Mr. President, you need to calm down? These are different ways of looking at the normal chain of command. And we operate in an environment since World War II where the president has the ability to launch nuclear weapons. This is especially troubling. This goes beyond the use of force in Afghanistan or Pakistan. These are the existential questions, to use your term, the biggest questions for any country and for our democracy.
Call here from Ryan in Mankato. Hi, Ryan. Thank you for waiting.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
No problem. Just to answer your question in general, I believe that the Trump administration and Donald Trump is absolutely intending to create chaos and distrust by undermining these agencies, as well as all the agencies that are there to protect us as people in a democracy, because I believe the administration is gearing itself towards an authoritarian government. And I think the history of government has proven that this is the course of action that we're on. And the Republicans that are supporting him should be the ones that are protecting us from this and keeping too much government away from and out of our individual lives. So I believe that the answers are there and clear. The chaos is the point.
What do you think, John?
I wouldn't go that far. And I hear the concern for Ryan. I am an optimist. We've been through tough times. I teach constitutional law, the structure of government. I notice my students, when they liked the president, they weren't concerned about the checks and balances, the courts, Congress, the media, non-governmental agencies, public opinion. Now that they don't like the president, now let's say Ryan is alarmed by the president, they take more of an interest in the checks and balances. I continue to be optimistic about how we get through this. I don't think any president has that much power. There will be some pushback. You've had many programs talking about the pushback that came from the career people in the Department of Defense that opposed some of the Bush-era policies after 9/11. I view that as a new form of separation of powers. They're not one of the formal branches of government, but they do have a role in affecting what the president does. We should take interest in who the president's advisors are, how did they get there, what about the career bureaucrats, what's involved in their selection process. This is the project for any democracy, and a democracy that is a world power. We got through the Nixon resignation. We've gotten through tough times. I think we'll get through this. Whether you're a Trump supporter or not, this republic is strong.
Interesting question here on Twitter, John. How does the president's decision to break with tradition by not reading daily intel briefings factor into the conversation? And then he asks, can you describe the content of the briefings?
I can't tell any specifics. There would be an investigation, but it's a newspaper for the president. It varies in length. It's called the PDB, the President's Daily Brief. There are some presidents that were readers. Clinton was one. He didn't want to interact with a person, the daily briefer from the CIA. He would read it. His staff would read it. Reagan, by contrast, was very visual, and the PDB, it's reported, would sometimes take video form. The CIA has tinkered with the layout. Now they're working with the Department of National Intelligence, with the DNI, and they want to present the information in a way that suits the president. President W. Bush liked to have the briefers come there. He would read, but he wanted to size up the briefers. What you have to do with the CIA is make sure that you're providing information, analysis that the president is not getting in the New York Times or the Washington mm-hmm. Post. You want to get the president's attention, the president's advisors. And this is something that the historians study, is what has been the relationship between the briefers on that PDB and the president. You remember that famous one of August 2001, the briefing of President Bush at his ranch in Crawford. There was debate about how specific the warning was about the possibility of an attack in the United States. It's a great question. It's a fascinating area for study and research.
I have a minute left, but who in the room can challenge, if you aren't, you know, deeply immersed in the ongoing intelligence, who is in the room to say to the intelligence agencies, but what about this? And what if you're not right about that? I guess I'm just saying, you know, shouldn't the relationship be somewhat adversarial? So the intelligence briefers have to back it up. Does that happen?
It does. And if the president is not comfortable doing that, then the president may put his vice president, think of Cheney, the back and forth that he had with the briefers. He wasn't bashful. Or other advisors, you want to test them. I think Obama enjoyed this process when he was dealing with the briefers, or even in his cabinet meetings, he enjoyed that professorial mode of not showing his views, challenging the very various views to try to get to a better place. I think you're right that this is inherent in our view of justice in this country, that we have this back and forth argument. It's part of American education. And I think you're correct. It should carry over into that relationship between the president and the briefers. What we want to know, we have to depend on David and other reporters. What we want to know is what is it like day to day, that back and forth.
John, thanks much. Good luck with the new semester. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.